You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
There we go. A little upbeat for this Saturday morning. Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today. I'm Mike Blewett, along with Kevin Walsh. We'll be here for the next 3 hours. And it's that time of year where we got a lot to talk about and sort of nothing to talk about. We have NBA All-Star Weekend. We have a lot of NFL free agency and upcoming draft news. We have the Olympics, which are ongoing. And I'm an Olympics, I'm a full-fledged Olympics junkie. I take pride in saying that I watch tons of the Olympics. And I think part of the reason for that, or a big motivating factor in that, is that I don't really have to analyze it all that much. I can kind of report on it, and I can rehash what's happened. But at the end of the day, I'm no curling expert. I'm no ski jump expert.
Don't sell yourself sure short people, then, Mike.
I'm sure some people out there would argue I'm no football or baseball expert either, but that's another topic for another segment. But in any event, I find that it's just fun to sit back and watch, and I can kind of root for the Americans and root for some of the other good stories out there, and that's why I'm into it. So I don't know if you've been a junkie as much as I have been the last week, Kevin.
I've been paying attention. It's been a rough go at it for pretty much all over for the U.S., especially a lot of the athletes that were really hyped up. Nathan Chen had quite the rough go at it this time around. Mikayla Shiffrin. The expectations were so high for her that I feel like perhaps she was kind of set up from failure from the beginning. She won a gold medal, yeah. And people are like, that was a poor performance, because she won a gold medal in the giant slalom, which was not her best, and then in her best, which is the regular slalom, she didn't even medal. So then people are like, oh, wow, cracking under pressure, this, that, or whatever. I don't know if you saw what she had said after the race. She was like, this might sound cocky, but I'm the best skier in the world, and I know that was not my best. It is what it is. Like, what matters is what you do on this ice right now, but I know I'm better than that. So I like that attitude, because I think, like, to be great, you have to be able to have those type of low moments and then bounce back through them. So overall, I think that Mikayla Shiffrin, even like moments like that, actually make me feel that she's going to become even bigger of a star than had she just swept all the gold.
Yeah, and she is respectful of Lindsey Vonn and acknowledges her as being the best skier of all time. She's just sort of arrogant about where she is right now. Speaking of poor performances, the United States hockey team is getting crushed right now. They're down 4-0 about midway through the third period. They let up a really soft goal with under a second to go in the second period, made it 3-0, and they've got no shot now. It's 4-0. We're going to bring producer Pete Considori on in the next hour to talk a little bit more about the United States hockey team and the NHL not allowing players to go and so on and so forth. We'll get into that a little bit more. But on the Mikayla Shiffrin thing, I tend to agree. And here's the bottom line for me on the Olympics. And I think I, like most fans out there, are rooting as hard as I can for the Americans, and I want them to win gold. Mm. But I realized if it wasn't the Sochi Olympics, then it was the Vancouver Olympics. And keep in mind, that's me being a sports fan for many years at that point. It is the margins of error and the margins of victory and quote-unquote defeat are so slim in this sport and can be so random that I think getting a medal is extremely big accomplishment. I know we always look towards gold, but if somebody lost by a hundredth of a second in the luge and they got a silver, what's the difference in the performance? They still were great. It's just, and when it comes to some of those judging sports too, it's even more difficult. Now, Nathan Chen would admit that he had the worst short program that he's probably ever skated, but last night he was brilliant. I was watching with my wife, and he had the best performance in the technical, or I guess it's called the free skate. So in any event, he goes home. He seemed happy with his performance. Yes, he doesn't medal, and he's still one of the best skaters in the world. Similar to Mikayla Shiffrin, she misses out, but nonetheless, she's one of the best skiers in the world, and she says the best. Now, the compacted schedule hurt her too.
Right. She mentioned that as well, because she and it wasn't an excuse, but she was like, yesterday I was going through the absolute highs of winning a gold medal. And that, you know, obviously it's a longer day than when you not only have that race, but go through the medaling process and obviously those highs. So that can take quite a bit out of you. And I think I'm probably sure that there was a part of her that was a bit nervous, because when you get that first gold medal, the fact that she was then on the verge of becoming the first ever three-time gold medalist female skier, with if she had won the slalom, that adds to it. She said at first she was like, I think that I'm sick, because she threw up before her first run in the slalom. I don't know if you
apparently
saw that.
She does this a lot.
Yeah, well,
apparently she does this a lot before races.
Yeah, she was like, at first she was like, I think maybe I'm ill, but then she's like, I think it was just nerves. But again, like, she's bounced back. And this is the thing about her, and even someone like Nathan Chen, like, Michaela Schifrin's 22. Chen is only 18. Like, if you think about the next time they're all going to be back in the next Winter Olympics, they're both still under the age of 27. That's incredible.
Yeah. The person I feel the worst for, but again, you have to consider that she's had an extremely successful career, is Lindsay Jacobellis. She's the she did snowboard cross, which is kind of the snowboard race. She was the one that famously in Torino in 2006, she was in the lead. She did a little hand grab kind of jump thing as she's approaching the finish line and fell. And then had a scramble to win the silver. So she blew the gold medal by doing that little trick. So she has not medaled in any of the races since. She just the other day was in the lead in the final and got passed by three snowboarders, came in fourth, lost out on the medal. Her fourth Olympics, was not able to get back on the podium after 2006. So I think that's the one that I'm really bummed that she wasn't able to medal. But look, she's won many gold medals in Winter X Games and World Championships and the like. So I'm sure she's comfortable with who she is. I think, unfortunately, because the Olympics is a rare event, we expect the great ones to be great on that particular day, and it just doesn't always happen that way in these types of sports. It just, look, like, golf is probably a sport that people watch more of than these Winter Olympic sports, and the best players do win the majors, but they can't win every major.
No.
And they don't win there's golf in the Olympics now. It doesn't mean that the number one ranked player in the world is absolutely going to win on that particular weekend.
It's a very, very small sample size. And when you look at even the races, I mean, you mentioned how close some of these races are. In the slalom event that Schifrin lost, she was off from the gold medalist by 0.4 seconds. She missed medaling by 0.08 seconds, like the fractional differences from being someone labeled as someone who choked and didn't live up to expectations coming in fourth. And, you know, if she was 0.5 seconds faster, she's an all-time great wearing two gold medals in two races. Like, it's that close. And again, it's an incredibly small sample size. I think the last 9 world championship races she's had, she's like won 7 of them. So she's clearly still the best skier, and that's why I think she felt the confidence enough to say something like that post that race. She knows how good she is, and she wasn't able to admit it today on this ice or this snow where it mattered most. I didn't get the job done.
So they were talking last night. I was watching the women's Super G. It is the race that Michaela Schifrin opted out of. Because the schedule got compacted with all the weather issues and the postponements and the delays, her schedule was going to be back to back to back to back on these 4 events. So she ended up winning the giant slalom.
Yes,
is that what she won?
Mm-hmm.
She won the giant slalom. She opted out. Then she did the slalom, her signature event, where she came in fourth. The Super G was yesterday or last night. With the time change, it was Saturday in Korea. She opted out of that one because her schedule was going to be too compacted, and then the downhill might be in a couple of days. Well, anyway, I'm watching the Super G last night. Lindsey Vonn had to go first of all the skiers. Tough position to be in because you don't know nobody knows the course yet, and people accumulate more data as more skiers go down. So she went out there. She had a really good run, bobbled one time, and it left her off of the podium. But the crazy thing about that one is that this snowboarder who converted to skiing not all that long ago, her name is Esther Ledecka. She's a Czech athlete who borrowed Michaela Schifrin's skis. So they are broadcasting last night, and they basically finished the women's Super G broadcast, and this Austrian skier had won, or so we thought. And they basically said Anna Weiss from Austria wins the gold. They show the leaderboard. What they failed to mention is that there were more skiers to come. There were skiers that they did not expect to make the podium that were going later in the day. So they come back from a commercial and they're like, not so fast. Here's what happened on the downhill. And this was like 20 minutes later. So anybody that had watched the Super G would have turned it off. I was just sitting there getting ready for this show. And a former snowboarder who converted to downhill skiing won the Super G race by a hundredth of a second and beat the presumed winner and won the gold medal. She was totally stunned by it. She didn't understand it. She's still saying there must be some sort of mistake. She doesn't know how it happened. And you can see as she finished, she was in disbelief because she didn't celebrate. She was looking at the leaderboard, confused as to how she had won, but she did. So people are saying it's as big an upset as the Miracle on Ice.
Good.
She was that much of an underdog. So a cool story. The American connection is that she used an American skis. But in any event,
can we count that?
Just another example.
Can we get like half a tally?
A tangential gold medal. So last thing on the Olympics for now. I did an interview yesterday, which we're going to edit and put together for release this week on the network. Probably put it up on YouTube, and we'll play it here next week on the show. I did an interview yesterday with an old friend of mine. Her name's Colleen Coyne. She was a U.S. Olympic gold medalist. She played women's ice hockey and was on the 1998 women's team that won the gold in Nagano. The only American team to do so and the last one to do so. It was just introduced that year in 98, and Canada has won the four gold since then, and we'll see what happens in this particular tournament. Hopefully they can put an end to the drought. But it was a really cool interview. She gave me a lot of insight as to what the Olympic experience is like, what it's like to be an Olympian. You know, it's not something you can ever take away from you, whether you want a medal or not. You made it to the Olympics. You're one of the best, and it's a very cool thing. I was working with her at the time while she was training to get to the Olympics, and then she made the team, and she was like, all right, I'm going to Japan. So, and I haven't really, to be honest, I haven't seen, I mean, she came back, and we worked together for a little bit, but we both moved on to new jobs, and I haven't seen her much since then. So it was really cool to catch up with her, and I'll make sure I tweet it out and get it out into social media so you all can give a listen. But it's really a lot of fun, you know, to hear her experience at the Olympics.
I think that's something that you said right there is very important. Is you're an Olympian, like that in of itself is an accomplishment. I think a lot of times, like, we don't step back enough, and we lose sight of the fact that being able to be at the absolute top of your profession, like, that's how you get to the Olympics. Like, the absolute best in the world are the people who's there. So even if you come in last, it's similar to a topic that we're going to get to with the All-Star Draft, but it's like, coming in last at the Olympics means that you're still better than 99% of the world at a specific sport. So it'll be interesting.
Higher than even
99.9. Like, it's, I mean, like, you're the elite of the elite. And I think it'll be interesting to listen to her perspective on the evolution of women's hockey, this team who I think a lot of people feel like might have the opportunity to bring a gold back. Obviously, most people are expecting that it'll come down to them in Canada, with Canada the favorites. But I think that it's always interesting to watch someone, or listen to someone rather, who was able to get that gold, which was, I think, at the time probably still surprising for people. And then since then, they haven't been able to do something. So I'm sure that she's continuously watching and figuring out, like, oh, if they did this here, but also the evolution of the sport as a whole, because women's hockey, I think, is something that is continuing to grow. Now, it's not like as if it would really ever, you know, be able to get to the NHL's peak, but the more we introduce new sports, I think that's great. And this is seeming like a sport that is continuing to pick up steam.
Yeah, so I'd have to see exactly how many teams are competing in this Olympics, but in her Olympics, there was only six teams competing. So they did a round robin, and at the end of the round robin, they just picked the top four teams to go through to the medal rounds. Or, in fact, I think they just did the round robin, And then USA and Canada were 1 and 2, so they just played for the gold medal. And then Finland and China were 3 and 4, so they just played for the bronze. They didn't do a semifinal or anything like that. There are more teams now, so you can do a round robin and a knockout round and the like. So the sport has grown certainly internationally, and it's kind of cool because she was part of that as well. That team was a part of that, and that Olympics was a part of that. So that's always fun. And look, since I've been watching the Olympics, and certainly since you were born, snowboarding is something that was introduced into the Olympics, and now it might be the most popular sport that people watch next to figure skating.
Yeah, I would say so. I think snowboarding too here specifically has an effect because of the X Games. You mentioned that before. I think that a lot of people were drawn to the extreme sports, and especially a guy like Shaun White because he was in both. I think he gets a lot of credit for making that an extremely popular event. Did you see Chloe Kim and her all her tweets during her events? Like, she's literally sat on the side, like in between runs, and she's just tweeting like, I could really go for a slice right now or some like cookies and cream ice cream.
Yeah, it's a fun sport in that way because they are having so much fun doing it. I think they just can kind of kick back. And, you know, Shaun White catches grief from his competitors because he's like an alpha dog and trying to be so competitive. But I think it's kind of cool that they're having fun with it, too, because it's just a fun sport. They're all trying to outdo each other in a fun competitive style. Shaun White is unique in that he's hyper competitive and wants to win the gold every time.
Yeah,
which I'm not critical of.
I thought that his run was very emotional. I know that a lot of it began to become layered in controversy and things like that. But just specifically his run and his emotion afterwards was really nice to watch.
Yes, cool. That's a little bit on the Olympics. We'll come back. We'll talk NBA. We got guests coming up: John Finkel, Emery Hunt, and Pete Considori is going to talk hockey. We'll be back after this to talk about the NBA.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
Back on Fantasy Sports Today, Mike Blue to Kevin Walsh. You can reach out to us today on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blue, and Kevin is at the Kevin Walsh. If you want to give us a call today, please do so at 844-843-6879. Beyond that, Fantasy Factor. What we got there? Fantasy Factor is the perfect daily fantasy site for the casual recreational player. There's flatter prize pools, smaller fields, and single-entry contests only. Fantasy Factor runs NHL and NBA free rolls every week. It's free entry, so simply sign up and enter www.fantasyfactor.com. I want to give a shout-out to a friend of mine, Robin, down in Tampa. She is part of the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Walk, and she's out there in Tampa today. She organized a huge event. I told her I'd give her a shout out on the radio, so I'm doing that right now. She is a loyal listener of the show. She organized a ton of money for the Komen Foundation, over $10,000. So I wanted to give a shout out to Robin and her whole crew that's walking. Hashtag the Fighting Sioux. Tremendous, right? So we do charitable causes here on FNTSY Radio. And obviously, we want to support her, one of the loyal listeners. So, Robin, keep going. Good luck and have fun at the event today. So, last thing, and I know it's going to be a tough transition out of this, but I think all of us here at Fantasy Sports Radio want to send our condolences to everybody down in Florida. High school shooting this week is another American tragedy that I think all of us agree we are fed up with hearing about. I think in some ways sending thoughts and prayers is starting to fall on deaf ears because people are tired of just saying that. But I do want to express my condolences to everybody that was killed, injured, impacted in any way by that shooting. It's senseless. I think we all know it. I'm not going to come sit here and politicize it. I just want to let people know that we're thinking about them because we have listeners from that area that call from that area, and we just want to everybody to know that we're thinking about them.
Absolutely. It's a horrible thing, and I think the one thing that maybe people can take encouragement from is it feels as if the people of Parkland, Florida are very, very adamant about making sure that this is not something that goes away. The statistics that have come out kind of about just how many school shootings there have been in just this short time since we've been in 2018, they're staggering. And a lot of it gets pushed aside because something happens on Monday, and by Wednesday there's seemingly a bigger story. But it's always tragic, and thoughts and prayers are important to give to the people, but it will take more than that to stop the next one from happening. And I hope that'll be the case. But of course, our thoughts and prayers are certainly with these people who have been impacted by this.
Right. Agree. So, like I said, there's no easy transition, but this is a sports talk show, so we're going to try and stick to what we do best, and that is talk sports, which is ironic because there is a political commentator this week that told LeBron that he should just shut up and dribble, and obviously he and Kevin Durant, who are part of this All-Star weekend, had something to say about that. And I obviously am on their side. I think telling anybody to just shut up and do their job is disrespectful. It's ignorant in thinking that people should only be involved in their job. Now, if it's something that you don't have any knowledge of, you should be open about that. But this isn't that. They can have opinions on societal causes and societal ills, and they're just simply expressing that. So Laura Ingraham is
trash.
Just made yet another ignorant comment in telling people to just shut up and dribble. It does feel racist. It certainly is ignorant.
Yep.
But I'm on LeBron's side on this. Yeah. I know a lot of people think some of the NBA players and other athletes can be blowhards. That's not the case. You're allowed to have basic political opinions as long as you're informed.
Here's the thing. We are in a different time. We live in a world now where athletes are more politically conscious and socially active, and it's a good thing. It's a great thing. A lot of these athletes are role models for their extreme talents, but it's also now important for them to be more than that. When you look at someone like LeBron James and what he does outside of basketball in his community, that's something that people can aspire to. And people seem to forget we watch these athletes for their incredible talents, right? When we look at LeBron James 90%, 95% of the time, 99% of the time, it's because we think about LeBron James as the basketball player. But when the basketball stops dribbling, there's so much more that he's doing. And that's the case for a lot of people. If you look at someone like Colin Kaepernick, where what he's now done outside of football is far more impactful than what he's done inside football. And I think that it's something that people are going to have to come to terms with. And we, you know, it all ties into sports, though, right? Josh Rosen is someone who wore a hat on a golf, I think it was actually one of Trump's golf courses that was anti-Trump. We'll leave it at that. And some people have, you know, started to knock the character of Josh Rosen for reasons saying that maybe he doesn't love football, he's too concerned with the outside world. No, it's just athletes are not just going to show up, put pads on, and then go home and sit until it's next time to put the pads on. There's a lot more going on in the minds of athletes, and it's an important thing, and it's going to become the new normal, and it's a good thing. You want your athletes to know what's going on around them. It's important, and that's what we're getting. So LeBron put the hashtag, we will never shut up and dribble. Great. Don't. Continue to talk because it's incredibly important, and you have the backing of most, I would say that.
You know, and it's funny because we're pretty far apart in age, you and I, about 19, 20 years or so. Is that 24?
23.
Is that right? 23. So, yeah, we're over 20 years apart in age. So I come from growing up in the 80s, and there was an incident with Charles Barkley. Now, I can't remember exactly when he said it. He probably said it early 90s, but he famously said, I'm not a role model. Nike made an ad campaign out of it. And it's just interesting to see the dichotomy between something like that and Charles saying, I'm just a basketball player. I'm not really here to set an example for your kids. Because, you know, Charles was kind of a bad boy, and he spit on somebody in a crowd and all that kind of stuff.
Well, how about Charles Barkley
now? Most of it was harmless. And Charles isn't Mr. Politically Correct now.
No, but if you look at him like, in the Alabama race and everything like that, he was extremely active in, you know, not that we're, you know, but he was extremely active in that where things are like, so that's a guy who's transitioned through it, where there was a point in his life where he was like, look, I'm not a role model. I'm Charles Barkley. I will do what Charles Barkley wants to do. And if that has an ill effect or that's not what you want your children to see, then that's on you. But now he is political. The show that they do on NBA TNT, many of times they do speak about these things. And a lot of people have attempted to say sports, politics, separate them. One on this side, one on that side. It's not the case anymore. They are very intertwined. And some people are going to try to blame athletes for that. Well, when you have the person who is in charge reigning, you know, making comments down towards athletes, this is exactly what's going to happen. And at the end of the day, athlete, radio host, whatever you are, you're still a citizen who lives within this country, and it is very important to you to know what is going on, and those are conversations that are always important to have.
Yeah, it's just interesting because, as you said, Charles has made this transition, and it also is very different. You know, Michael Jordan wasn't outspoken politically. He's become a little bit more so. Charles wasn't. Now he's more so. And I think athletes from a different generation are seeing it as their responsibility to more be more socially conscious and voice their opinions when they have a platform like they do. So let's turn over to a little bit of a controversy that was had regarding LaMarcus Aldridge and
Al Horford.
Al Horford, right. So I actually talked about this a month ago, and it seemed like everybody was kind of on the same page about them televising this draft. For those that don't know, the NBA All-Star Game is drafted by two players. I don't know how they selected it. Was LeBron and Steph the two leading vote-getters, and that's why they got the draft?
Yes.
Okay. So so LeBron and Steph draft the teams, and then some, of course, somebody shoots their mouth off and says these are the guys that got picked last. LaMarcus Aldridge by LeBron was the dead last pick, and Al Horford was second to last. So he's the last pick by Steph Curry's team. I was wholly in favor of televising this, and now I'm kind of having second thoughts because people are using it as a vehicle to insult these two players, who, by the way, are amongst the top 24 basketball players in the world. Made over $100 million in their lifetime, probably more, and have nothing to be embarrassed about. I think they handled it brilliantly, both of them. But now I wonder if it puts some of the players in a tough spot because, you know, they got picked last. You know, anybody's been on the playground. You don't want to be picked last. But so to be an NBA player and have that sort of somebody making it a pejorative is kind of a tough deal.
Well, all right. This is my thing with this whole thing, all right? Mike, if I put you in a draft of the absolute best of the best radio hosts in the entire world, and you went 24th out of 24, but you were in the top 24 in the whole world, I think you'd be okay with that. And the other thing is there are ways to make it less funny. I know when the NHL did this because they've been doing this.
But I think I was better than four of the. I think I was better than like
that's fine.
Five or six of the guys.
Of course, I mean that's the thing. That's what gives us the motivation to keep going and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, like LaMarcus, like who's going to give LaMarcus Aldridge crap? People on the internet. That's going to happen no matter what. That's the furthest that should be from his words. Like who's going to make fun of him? Danny Green on the Spurs is going to be like, ha, you were picked last. Like, get out of here, Danny Green. You are. You know, no one has ever thought about you making an all-star team.
People will literally criticize anything on Twitter and on the internet. So you have to keep that in perspective. I remember a prime example, and I just wanted to shut down the internet for the rest of my life. When J.J. Watt ultimately raised $37 million, but there was a point at which it was like $18 million before it had gotten up to that number. And he tweeted out a picture of all these trucks mobilizing in Houston with supplies and Gatorades and food and all this kind of stuff. And like the first comment on the post is like, is that what you did with all the $18 million? It seems like he came up short on supplies. And he's like, people are like criticizing him for the manner in which he did it. Now, obviously the person was uninformed and he's like, I know, we haven't even spent a dime yet. These are just charitable donations that people are giving. But it just made me realize that people will criticize anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Here's the one thing, I'll say this. In the NHL, they had the last guy who got picked got charitable, they donated money to his charity. Like, So that's kind of a thing where it's a funny thing. I remember Clay Thompson was like, it'd be funny to laugh at the guy who's picked last. Like, you have to be able to laugh at yourself, man. Like, at the end of the day, you're an NBA All-Star. And you're not even one of the replacement guys. I mean, like, so there are guys there who weren't even selected to the All-Star team, like Goran Dragic, Kemba Walker, even Paul George within your own conference. Like, Paul George can't laugh at you. He wasn't even selected. You were selected over him. So, like, come on. I think that, honestly, the reason it was not televised is it was the first year the NBA was doing it, and they wanted to
see how it shook out first.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that they'll then speak with the Players Association. I mean, the thing is, you know, maybe LaMarcus Aldridge is the guy who's like, ah, this kind of stinks. Like, you know, I was picked last, and you never want to be picked last. But just about all of the other players where, you know, LeBron, Steph, Klay Thompson, Kevin, like, they were all Durant. They're like, we should probably televise this. Like, it'd be a lot more fun. It would be something that'd be really fun to see. And I think it would be an absolute blast. And this is the one thing as well about the NBA. And Mike, I know that, I'm sure you know this. Anybody that follows the NBA knows this. It's almost like a reality TV show at times. Like, the joy that would come from LeBron saying, I select Kyrie, and just the expected tension that might be there that we could then all put GIFs on Twitter. Perhaps a Kevin Durant eye roll when Westbrook is selected by LeBron or vice versa. Like, those are the things that the NBA is built around. Like, the NBA is based so much on star power, and the All-Star game is where the stars of the stars are there. So this is the stuff that the NBA is built on and what they've continued to build their brand on. So this is perfect for them. And I think that next year it will be televised, and I think that it should be.
So we'll see how that shakes out. Now, when it comes to NBA, by the way, in the next segment, we're going to have John Finkel on Twitter at John_Finkel, F-I-N-K-E-L. He just recently wrote a book on Charlie Ward called The Athlete. So we're going to get some good perspective on Charlie Ward's decision making, why he went into the NBA, what his NBA career was like. We've got a couple of FSU stories that we'll share. You know, it is odd when people, you know, you're born probably after Charlie Ward won the Heisman, mm-hmm. or maybe the same year. So Charlie Ward won the Heisman Trophy. He was the best player in college football that year. I don't think it was very arguable. They won the national championship, and he just chose basketball because at that time it was a better path for him. So how times have changed, you know, and what it would look like for him now could be very different. But we're going to talk to John Finkel about that and have a little bit of fun with it. He's got some good stories, so we'll talk to him a little bit more about that. Now, last thing I'll ask you before we get out of here, Slam Dunk Championship. We got Victor Oladipo, Larry Nance Jr., whose dad won the first ever Slam Dunk Championship back in 84, I believe it was, Utah's Donovan Mitchell, and Dallas's Dennis Smith Jr. Mm. Not exactly a laundry list of stars, but in any event, is this something you're going to tune into?
Absolutely. I love the Slam Dunk Contest, and I think, honestly, I think it's better when there are not a gluttony of stars there, because that means that we're just picking the best athletes, and I think that that's probably going to lead to some better dunks. Although, I think everybody is in agreement that we would still wish LeBron James would do a dunk contest, but year 15, I think the ship has sailed on that. But
yeah,
absolutely, I'll watch, and I enjoy all of the events, even the city events where they have everybody shoot all the shots, and there's like a WNBA player, a Hall of Famer from the city that comes. I love all that stuff.
Yeah. So NBA All-Star Weekend is upon us. We're going to have John Finkel coming up in a couple of minutes right after the break. It's Kevin Walsh and Mike Blewett. We are the Fantasy Sports Today crew. We're here for the next couple of hours. We'll be back after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844- 844-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Give you a sense of what's going on today on the network. Fantasy Sports Today, our show is here till noon. Then the weekend fantasy update with Tony Sakata and Joe Galina. That is 12 to 3. And then In This League with Bogman and the Welsh. That is 3 to 5. So that's your live programming today. You'll get some replays after that. Dane Martinez, Fantasy Freestyle will be on there. And then you'll hear some replays of us after that. But in any event, we're going to bring in a friend of mine and an author. He's been on this program before to talk about a book in the past. He did a Mean Joe Green book. But what we're talking about today is his latest effort called The Athlete, The Greatness, Grace, and the Unprecedented Life of Charlie Ward, a former Florida State Seminole and Heisman Trophy winner, former New York Knick. So I rooted for Charlie Ward for many years. And, John, thanks for coming on with us, buddy. I appreciate it. How are things?
Things are really good. Thank you for having me on. Always good to join you guys on a Saturday morning here.
Yeah, so you can find John on Twitter, at @John_Finkel. Again, the book is The Athlete. So it always interests me, an author like yourself, what was the genesis of this particular book? Why was he the topic of your next effort?
Yeah, it's funny in this one because I've kind of joked it on a couple occasions that it's kind of like 20, 25 years in the making, because the first major college football game that I ever saw, which you probably be familiar with, was the kickoff classic at the Meadowlands. Back in 93, and it was Florida State versus Kansas. And, you know, Kansas, that was not very good, obviously. Florida State came in at the season number one. And it was Charlie Ward as the starting quarterback. And I used to go to that game every year because my friend's dad had tickets, and it was one of those things where it had, you know, the Seminole, the Florida Tomahawk Chop, and the Florida State fans coming up to New Jersey. It was the first exposure I had of that, and watching him lead that team and just absolutely demolish Kansas. There's nothing memorable about the game on Kansas' side. And then I remember several months later being with a couple of them, probably the same friends, watching college basketball. And Florida State was really good. And realizing that their point guard was also the guy who just led them to the national championship at a Heisman Trophy. And it kind of just stuck with me forever, and flash forward to all the way from maybe 2 or 3 years ago when I was working for the College Football Hall of Fame and doing, building their platform. And we were doing interviews with Heisman Trophy winners and Hall of Famers about what they thought the upcoming season was going to be like for their teams. And I ended up calling Charlie for the interview, and we had a really long chat. And I told him about that game. And, you know, sometimes you just hit it off in terms of an easy conversation. And I kind of told him at the end of that, I said, look, I'm wrapping up a book on Mean Joe Green, but I don't know, maybe we'll work together. And he said, yeah, let's talk about that. And probably 6 months after that, I texted him and said, hey, you want to have a conversation about that book? And he said, yes, and there we are.
Good stuff.
John, let me ask you, because for someone like myself, I didn't get to watch Charlie Ward when he was at the peak of his powers, but I was doing my research, and it seems like this guy had some gravity to him. Like, he was a real superstar, even at his time in college. Can you perhaps put it into perspective for someone like myself who didn't get to watch Charlie Ward, just how special this guy was?
Yeah, it's like, one of the best ways to put it, it's like if you're watching any of the players now and you see kind of athletically those highlights of Russell Westbrook kind of on a football field, like he was quiet and his team was so good, the defense was so good, and, you know, Florida State, you know, Deion Sanders is now in, you know, I'm doing all studio stuff, but he was the flashiest player that maybe we had, in the sports universe coming out of college, you know, the pros. With the dances and the end zone dances, the high stepping of the end zone, and Charlie was the opposite of that, but just athletic. So it was more magnetic. So like athletically, he was as dynamic as anyone you could have seen. I pick Russell Westbrook a lot because Charlie was only made, 6'2", 190 pounds probably at his peak athletically, but he made every single person miss. And he was, you go all the way through the NBA, you talk to the players he played against, even Jeff Van Gundy, he was considered one of the upper echelon of toughest guys in the league. And, that's kind of an example of the kind of play he had, and in terms of the magnetism that he had. I mean, you had all these guys around him who gravitated towards him and who led him, and he was the quietest guy on the field.
Yeah, and, to give some perspective, because I did get a chance to watch these guys, Charlie was unquestionably the best player in the country that year. He still has the third highest gap in Heisman voting, so it was a runaway victory for him in the Heisman. My personal connection to this is, so I was a student at Boston College at the time that Charlie was the QB at Florida State. I had tickets to the BC Notre Dame game in Notre Dame as a student in Boston. So trust me, at the time, I was rooting for Notre Dame because I, as a BC student, was ready to make the let me back up. The game of the century, as it was posed in 1993, was an undefeated Notre Dame team going up against an undefeated Florida State team. Now, that Florida State team had beaten opponents to a pulp. Here's their record that year: 42-0, 45-7, 57-0, 33-7, 51-0, 28-10, 40-14, 54-0, 49-20. That's going into the Notre Dame game. Then they lose. The number one, number two teams in the country. And Charlie Ward had a pass towards the end zone at the end of that game against Notre Dame. It fell incomplete. And then I road trip as a BC student to go play Notre Dame, and we knock off Notre Dame last play of the game, famous field goal by David Gordon, and it vaults Florida State back into the number one position. They win a couple of more games. They beat Nebraska in the Orange Bowl in a really tight contest, but really just a tremendous season for that team, and he had Derek Brooks was a teammate and other NFL players as well. So that's just my setup, my personal connection to Charlie. And then when he became a Nick, it sort of tied it all together for me, and I really liked rooting for him.
Yeah, there's a great story that he was telling in the book. So yeah, that year, heading into that Notre Dame game, for perspective, like they beat Miami, which is number three, who they lost to a bunch. They beat a top 20 Virginia team, a top 20 Clemson team, a top 20 North Carolina team. So the teams that you mentioned they were destroying were all ranked teams. And the funny story about that is, so while all the Florida State players were waiting to play NC State while they were watching that BC Notre Dame game, and the NC State players were warming up on the field, and they had the referees and the officials were looking around and had no idea where the Florida State team was, and they were all in the dorms watching the end of that game, and they finally came when BC won, they went nuts. Came out, and the NC State coach, remember, there's a great quote, I'm going to mangle the quote, I don't remember exactly, saw them running out and basically said, oh, crap. And they ended up, NC State, a pretty decent team, lost 62-3 because it was going to be a statement game for Florida State. And then the next week, Florida State came out and beat a top 10 Florida team by almost 10 points, or over 10 points, I think. And so, yeah, it was just a beatdown of a season for everybody. And Charlie was undoubtedly the best player in the country by far.
They beat seven ranked teams in 12 games, just for perspective.
Yeah, it's crazy, yeah.
This just sounds like Alabama.
Two, three, yeah. Yeah.
John, so let me ask you this, though, because you say that this guy was dominant, right, and you compared him athletically to Russell Westbrook. He plays in the NBA. So, again, like this for me, is, as I'm learning more and more about him, I'm starting to ask myself, like, when we talk about the all-time great athletes, and not just in accomplishment, but just pure athleticism, right? Bo Jackson is the guy that always comes to mind. We know that Deion Sanders was a two-sport athlete. Charlie Ward, for me, I feel like this is the most I'm hearing about him, but that feels like that's a disservice to a guy that clearly should be discussed as one of the all-time premier athletes, no?
Yeah, I agree completely. That was why, to me, the reason the book was called The Athlete is because everybody from his fifth grade, baseball, coach, all the way up to Tony Dungy and Jeff Van Gundy and Alan Houston and all these guys that I spoke to for the book. Within a minute, when you say, "Well, describe kind of the question that you gave me, like what made him special?" They're like, "Man, he was just an athlete. He was just the best athlete everywhere he was." And to me, when you talk about the best athletes of all time, one of the most amazing things, and I had was lucky enough because Charlie was very gracious with kind of his connections with the book to spend a couple conversations with Tony Dungy, who probably I didn't know, but he actually also played basketball and football in Minnesota for 2 years. And he was saying, like, "Look, I've been around both sports, both professional athletes. It isn't just that he was some physical specimen like a Julius Peppers who played, overpowered people at defensive end and played power forward naturally. That kind of athletic ability can get 8 points and 8 rebounds in a basketball game. He was the point guard in an NBA final, and he won the Heisman Trophy, and he was the best quarterback in the country. Like, there's nobody who could do that. We're not sitting here saying, Baker Mayfield has a shot at playing point guard, right? Like, it's never going to happen. So the idea of that, the rarity of that, and the rare skill set to be the floor leader in both. And the crazy thing, which Tony pointed out to me, was when Charlie was finally getting Tony drafted, he had only played about a third of the basketball as the guys he was going to be drafted against. He was 20 games behind every year because he had no preseason and no regular season, and he started playing basketball in like mid-February, maybe a month before the tournament, which is crazy how much he was able to catch up. And he went to, an Elite Eight, two Sweet 16s, ridiculous.
So we're with John Finkel, author of a new book called The Athlete, about Charlie Ward. It's The Greatness, Grace, and the Unprecedented Life of Charlie Ward. You can find the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers. Visit www.johnfinkel.com for more info. You also find John on Twitter at John_Finkel. That's FINKEL. So a little bit about his decision to play hoops, because obviously we're talking about how great a football player he was. I remember thinking at the time, this isn't me looking back at it in hindsight, I remember thinking that his chances as a professional athlete were better on the basketball court. I remember thinking that at the time, because I thought he was a really good point guard. I just thought he can have an extended career. Now, this also ties into the fact that teams, call it whatever you will, but they were not accepting of perhaps an African-American athlete leading their football team at quarterback position. This was before Vince Young. This is kind of around the time that this is even before Steve McNair. So his decision really to play basketball was rooted in him thinking that he was going to have a better career in basketball, or how did he come to arrive at that decision?
Well, he looked at it almost as like he kind of took it out of his own. He took it out of his own hands in the sense that, right, to your point, other than Randall Cunningham, there was not that sort of quintessential star athlete quarterback who's African American. And he truly doesn't, believe that was too much of it. He said right early on he was not going to commit to football. He wanted to let both drafts play at basketball and football. He had, like I said, he had not played a lot of basketball that year because the national championship extended the season all the way into the promos and stuff. So he wanted to give himself plenty of time, 2 months or so, to train and go on Nike camps and go to the ABCD camps and play basketball to give himself a good chance at that draft as well. And he just wouldn't commit. He had plenty of pro days. There's a lot of research I found in the book. The Chiefs, the Eagles, the Vikings, Tony Dungy was basically begging Denny Green to draft him. So he would absolutely have gotten drafted, most likely not in the first round. Probably the highest would have been second, but almost all the research I did, even Mel Kiper said he was probably a lock for a third-round pick somewhere. But he ended up basically saying, he's contacted him and he said, "I've said all along, I will not commit to signing with you." And we all know how valuable NFL draft picks are. He said, "I want to see how the NBA draft plays out." And he just had an incredible run-up to the NBA draft with all his camps and all his tryouts and his one-on-one. He had a tryout with Orlando where he pretty much torched Penny Hardaway. He's about 6 inches taller and, wingspan and better shooter and all that kind of stuff. And he just made his mark, and it turned out that he didn't even get drafted in the NFL. Again, he didn't get drafted after the count because he just wouldn't commit. And then he got drafted as first-round pick for the Knicks. So he looked at it as it was it was the, you know, the plan that was out there for him, and that's what he did.
John, when we talk about a guy like Charlie Ward, right, it sounds perhaps as if he was ahead of his time, right? We back then, they were not as accepting of, I'm sure, you know, the idea of an African-American athlete leading their team, but also just their style of quarterback, where now in the NFL, I mean, you've got guys like Baker Mayfield, who's praised for his athleticism, and people like Josh Rosen, who feel like, oh, he's not going to be athletic enough for the position. Do you think that someone like Charlie Ward now would have been able to be more dominant and more successful than a guy who was quite clearly one of the most dominant college football quarterbacks we've seen, but maybe, you know, if he played today, the NFL would have been the route he would have went?
Yeah, no doubt. The thing that a lot of people said, they were comparing him to, like, and this is about the best comparison you can get, but like Steve Young, a mix between Steve Young and Joe Montana, because he was unflappable. I mean, you look at, he had four or five, it, you know, massive comeback on the road against huge teams, and like when I said, Notre Dame, you know, came up short by a pass, but he had a comeback in the Orange Bowl the year before. He finished fifth in the Heisman voting the year before, so it wasn't like he came out of nowhere. He was benched the first two games for throwing interceptions. So the key that would have had to have been done was nobody was really comfortable doing back then, was building an offense around his skill set. The NFL was very set on, you know, getting a pocket passer, having two guys behind that guy who could step in, and having a system. And very much like when they had to build a new system around Steve Young and his lefty, all that kind of stuff, the team would have had to build around him. And really the guy you could look at in terms of poise and ability is Russell Wilson. There's no doubt, Charlie, in that exact spot, performs very similar. Not knocking Russ, but putting him in that category of, yes, 100%. Nowadays, Charlie would probably have a very long NFL career.
It's good stuff. That's John Finkel. You can find the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers, www.johnfinkel.com. John, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Good luck with the book, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Okay, we're back after this to talk about the Olympics.